song and a cocktail can turn any moment into an occasion. Cheers.
Oh, I hate that, but I guess. Cheers.
Cheers.
Eyes.
It's like eyes, eyes, eyes.
Eyes, eyes,
eyes. Good afternoon, everyone.
This is our thumbnail.
Right. Cling, 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 cling. Oh, should we call ourselves Bar Relative?
That would put the, can we put the parentheses around the B though? Bar Relative.
Why would we do that?
I don't know. It's like chic and new and modern.
Do you know the definition of those two words?
No, I'm illiterate.
That's so fair. Actually.
Already.
I'm sorry. Usually it's not me who starts it off. Usually it's not me.
Going to
how quick you say, like, that's a valid statement you just said.
I was validating. People say we don't validate Michael enough. There you go.
Ooh.
It's not the poet.
Actually, you know what? I have a quote to read from one of our fans. No, y'all can keep talking. I'll find this quote.
Now you want a moment of, you want a moment to find it. Okay, well, I'm gonna let you find it while I drink my drink brought to you.
Ooh.
Sidecar.
Oh, what's in a sidecar?
What is in the sidecar, Anthony?
Well, so sidecars, I love a brown liquor, okay, everybody. And the cognac that I prefer, even though y'all know, anybody that knows me know I'm a Hennessy girl. Okay. Anybody that knows me know Hennessy. You better ask somebody at these conferences, because whenever they are out with me, Anthony, are we drinking Hennessy? Is that a question?
Mm.
Okay. But for my sidecars, I'm a little bit more reformed. Mm. And what I'm about to show you is actually not technically a name brand, but it is such a great cognac for this recipe. This is brought to you.
Come on, Kirkland's.
Kirkland's. Mm-hmm. This is Kirkland's Cognac XO. Unfortunately, I live in Texas, and Texas actually doesn't sell Kirkland's brand things because it's not a publicly traded company. So Texas have weird liquor laws. So when I was driving back from Georgia, the last Costco that I could find was in Louisiana. So I got my stash. Mm-hmm. And I brought it with me. So in a sidecar, huh?
Continue.
In a sidecar, it's really 2-to-1 part of cognac. You're supposed to use what's that thing called? Grand Marnier. However, at the time, I wasn't financially available for Grand Marnier. So I got Grand Dauphine, okay? Grand Dauphine of 1705, which is the orange liqueur. All you really need is the orange liqueur. Grand Marnier is perfect. This is also actually a really good substitute. Put you about one part lemon juice. And if you want a little something to cut the brown liquor, add you just a little pinch of simple syrup. And there you go. You have a sidecar. That's my drink of choice. Cheers.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. Well, if anybody knows me, you know I got my old fashioned. Classy. But today, I opened up one of my favorite bottles. My hand-picked Yellowstone bottle. Picked by a veteran. You know, hashtag go armed forces. And then, instead of using regular simple syrup, I used maple syrup that was finished in a bourbon barrel.
Oh, you think he's something.
Right. And then, you know, you add bitters and bitters.
Where did you get that from?
The maple syrup?
Yeah.
Costco? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Actually, it was a gift, but then I found it at Costco as well. Mm-hmm. So, Anthony was not a believer in Costco until I made him go to Costco.
Damn. And now I'm a Costco stan. Like, I really love Costco.
Mm-hmm. My drink is fun and fruity. The main base is this Meadowland
yeah.
Simple syrup. syrup, and it's a Marion Berry black pepper syrup that I got in Leavenworth, Washington. And I just kind of mixed it a little bit with, some Bacardi coconut rum, some coconut cream in there, and what a lemon juice.
Let me see it.
And this is what it looks like. It's very cute, very fun, very like,
Cute.
ooh, I'm on a boat.
Which we will be
We will.
soon. But before I go there, I will just have to say the drinks that you just saw is truly our personalities of the drinks. And a little story about rum and Lauren. I'm surprised she's drinking it because we were all on a cruise last year. And I thought we all agreed that we weren't drinking rum for at least 365 days because we had too much. But we three will be going on a cruise this summer to congratulate and just uplift our friend, will be Dr. Lauren Green over here. And I just want to say that Lauren did a wonderful, beautiful,
Fabulous. Brava.
inspiring lecture recital on Saturday. And
Beautiful.
Lauren, I just want you to take some time and tell everybody about Antoinette and the research that you found and how you have really done the work to unhide her and her advocacy and her work. I thought it was beautiful.
No, I'm so thankful to be like on this side of it. Antoinette, I feel like found me. That's definitely what her niece, who was kind of the main person who helped me find more information on her, really has said is like Antoinette finds people, herself. And I was originally, my lecture recital was almost so many things. At first, I initially even thought I was going to like, I love chamber work and I love the work that Kevin Day, our friend, lovely bestie, like has done. And it shifted to being like, maybe I want to do some chamber stuff of Kevin's. Maybe I want to do like a femme noir thing that's just like black female flute composers. And then it was that led me to an article that was literally black female flute composers. And Antoinette, Dorothy Antoinette Handy was listed on that article. And I was like, who's this? I never heard of her. Who's this? And I went to, she had one piece, only one piece. And I found a recording of it. And then I found her great niece had commented on the recording. And so I went and like looked into her. I did like a paper that was like basically a femme noir paper for one of my classes on her and some other like Valerie Coleman, Alison Langa Toll. And as I was researching her for that class for that paper, I was like, wait, girly was she like composed the one piece. She was an amazing flutist, studied all these conservatories and everything. She was an educator at many HBCUs. She was like the director of music for National Endowment of the Arts. I was like, how the hell have I not heard about her? And basically from there, I was just more interested in knowing more about her. So that's when I reached out to her great niece, Patrice. Shout out Patrice for all the time. Literally just spent in a Zoom meeting, phone calls, just talking about her. And I was like, this is a lot of information. And I felt the call to do more with it. Just know it myself. I felt that call to like, I need to share this information out with more people. And that's when ultimately, like this is sometime like spring of last year, I decided to make Antoinette the topic of my lecture recital and playing her piece homage as well. But really the lecture recital was just a celebration of her life and her impact that she had in multiple areas. Really the big point, the aha of my lecture recital, besides just wanting to share more about her, is the fact that she was so many different things. And it's the fact that she was so many things. She couldn't just be categorized as one thing. It's hard, really, historically, to do that, to place someone who was multiple things equally and at a well high level. So I feel like me doing this lecture recital was like a, first of all, she is an example to us all. So many of us now, we have talked about this so much on this podcast about you have to be so many things at such a high level nowadays to be even considered for tenure position, university positions and other things around like in, just in the field. And she was already doing this in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s as a black woman. And it's that fact that is why she has remained hidden for so long, is she was everywhere. She was tapped into everything, but she just didn't, she wasn't concentrated into one thing. And so I don't know, I just felt so touched and moved by the stories of her and the person that she was. And as always, my performance is the most impactful for me, and I feel like for other people, when I feel like it's being used to do more than just play the piece. So in a way, it was me also just highlighting her more, that if more people who play her piece and more people who know her, share her story, etc. So I got to play her piece, which was also really, it's just fun. Like, it was a fun little flute piece, and like, it wasn't necessarily like, it didn't have any like specifically like black things about the piece, and like, that's not really what she was doing at that time of her life, and I made sure to really highlight that. So later on in her life, she never really played the piece. She was playing other people's pieces that were really steeped in the African American black tradition, and that is what she really turned to. But the piece itself is a beautifully written piece by a black female composer, and like, that's why I played it, and it's hers, and it's amazing. And I don't know, it's just, it was so exciting to do. I've never done a lecture recital before either. So combining different parts of my life and what I do as like a presenter and a flutist, and in a way, I guess an educator. So many people came up to me after that and was like, I learned so much. And I was like, oh good, I'm glad. Like, I'm glad. But like, that's something I don't really hear after recitals normally. Usually it's like, oh, I was just moved, and that's all beautiful too. But what was so beautiful about this is it was both. You know, people were like, I really love the piece, but also I learned just so much about her and her life. And yeah, I don't know. Just like Anthony was saying, the other call to action of mine at the end of the recital was like, be more curious about what else is out there. There's so much more that's still out there that we don't know about. I'm gonna have the link to it sometime soon this week, so look for me on socials and website and everything if you want to like check out more about Antoinette, and actually watch the lecture recital. But truly, I can't imagine a better end of my, like, the last recital of my education. Like, wow, truly, like, on a high note. So thank you, Antoinette, truly. And I thank you for everyone for supporting me like up to this point. Like, I can't, anytime we talk about it, it's like crazy, because I'm like, I am getting to the end of my doctorate, and that's just, I don't know, it's insane to say, but thank y'all.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to you talk about her and explain all the different facets of her. I think that is something about when you do a regular recital, that part is missing because as we have, delved into with our guests that we have had on here, plus when we did our Wagnerism, that composers have many different versions of themselves that, through one piece isn't just totally all of them. It's a facet, is one perspective of them, not a holistic type of situation. And I love how you spoke to many different aspects of her life. And something that you said a little earlier about that her piece, the homage, wasn't necessarily, I guess you could say, have the aspects of kind of the black music of maybe spiritual based or something like that, but it is still black folk music because a black person wrote it. Therefore, it is folk music.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. I take that from Marie Douglas because that's what she says. She says, although I didn't use, folk tunes or spirituals, this piece is folk music because I wrote it and I am black. So
Sure.
just because it didn't have a spiritual does not mean that it is any less than
Absolutely.
of the genre. And so, even though it didn't, and even when I was listening to it last night, I was like, oh my gosh, like that still had version. You can still tell the influence of our music that is there. And I thought the piece was beautiful, very intricate, very thoughtful. And I thought you played it with such delicacy and beauty. It was amazing. Really, really great.
It was so refreshing to hear a flute that can play low.
Ooh, my
Baby. See, why he always
God.
got to make it shady?
I'm
Why
not
you
making
always got to make
it
it
shady. I'm
shady?
not making it
No, that was
shady.
shady tones. That was
Was
shady
it?
tones. Yes.
I've always enjoyed Lauren's low playing and her mid-range playing. That's why I love Griffith's poem. Like, that was like one of my favorite pieces you've ever played. You should whip that thing out, by the way. But anyways, I've
She's
always
putting in
loved,
requests.
I'm like, okay, flutes, you can play higher, whatever. But
Right.
baby, show me. You can play the flute, you gotta play low.
Yeah, low.
And baby Lauren played low. And I said, come on, low C. I said,
Yes,
right. I was that pink, she was out.
baby, pinky,
Yes.
pinky.
Yes.
And I didn't hear no airiness. I heard full. I said,
Tone. Tone.
yes. When I
No,
got more, I was so happy. I said,
it's so funny because like I always think about flute playing as an extension of the voice, and my voice is like deeper. Like I'm definitely an alto, and like my mom, her voice, it's very low. And like Antoinette, I played a recording of her radio show, and
yeah.
her voice also sat very low. And it makes me also think of just black flute players in general. Just in like a lot of us have that, like we're in that alto range that it's just so easy to activate the lower and middle registers. And in a way, that's why whenever we play any spirituals on the flute, I immediately am like, oh yeah, we're sitting right here.
Yeah.
I
That
love it.
natural warmth of Black women's voices, really. I mean, even when you listen to some of the Sopranos, like I've been listening to a lot of Leontine Price and Jesse Norman, like their speaking voices are very rich, full, and deep. And especially Black women from the South, voices are way more deeper than, other areas of the United States. So it is very interesting how that kind of plays with each other. I think it's gorgeous. And what I also love seeing about you is that you are doing a lot of things on the more administrative side. But don't get fooled, baby. She can still play the flute down.
Yeah,
Down.
and she walked
Okay.
out there. I said, come on, arts admin queen and flute
And
queen.
flautist, like, don't get it
Baby, don't
twisted.
play with me. I'll give you a TNG if you need some, baby, but I'm not
Okay.
so weak at y'all. No, it's funny because like I also had friends in the audience who like we went out to dinner afterwards and they're like, Lauren likes to play, like she don't be playing that flute, but
Yes.
she doesn't play like she don't like playing that flute, but I know she like playing the flute.
Right.
No, I do love the flute. I will always say is the thing that got me where I am. Like me just like seeing the flute, hearing the flute and being like that's what I want to do and like loving band is ultimately where my passion for music grew out of and it's always going to have a place in my life. And I don't know, it's just something I was saying last night at dinner too was like I just feel like I don't lead with being a flute player anymore, if that makes sense. Like a lot of people who are like, flute is their primary, and that is what they want to be doing, like 75 plus percent of the time. That is not who I am anymore in this moment. That doesn't mean that that can't shift. But originally, I was like, I want to get a, orchestral job playing, and I want to sit in an orchestra and everything. That's just shifted. But doing like community-based projects, and just getting together with a group of people I like and playing new music and everything, or doing things like what I did last night, where I'm combining multiple passions together, and it also happens to include my playing, which is one of my passions. Love that. I always want to do that. But it's just really funny to me because I don't know, I guess I don't even see it as my biggest skill anymore. So it's like hard for me to be like, oh, I'm a flutist. Like in I am a flute, obviously, but like I don't know, Michael can lead with being a trumpeter and that doing, and it, to me that makes sense in my head, but me saying the same thing for flute doesn't feel the same, not because necessarily I've lost that interest or that passion, but because it feels like other areas of my life have really like taken root and is what I'm really driven by these days. And so all that to say, as you go through life, and I am learning this so much, it is okay if like 1 year, it's like 30 this, 60 this, 10 that, or actually it's like 40, 40, 20 this year. Like those things can really shift. And you don't really have to categorize yourself if you don't want to. Which I think, again, going back to the big point of Antoinette is that she was just so many things. And I think she just transitioned through life with like, what, how can I be the most impactful? And that is kind of where I am in my life, where I'm like, I might switch it up and do teaching. Y'all never know what's going on. Who
Okay,
knows?
because you're a doctor, baby. You have
Right.
doctorates. Yeah, I just thought it was just, I think you and Antoinette have so many kind of parallelisms between each
Absolutely.
other. And it's just funny that you two found each other and the way the world and the way the universe works, you just found somebody who, Who did the same things that you were currently going through your career to do. And I think that is just truly phenomenal. Sometimes, and anybody that is listening that is about to go through, trying to find whatever your big project is, sometimes it just lands in your lap. When I did my master's recital for conducting, I had my original thing that I was going to do ended up none of those pieces actually making it on my recital. It just the pieces that ended on my recital, it fell in my lap. And then it just so happened to have this thread of a theme through it. It just fell. And so I know that right now, some people, like I just got a text from a friend asking about different choral music for some transcriptions that he wants to do. And the thing is, it will land in your lap. I promise you. Well, I won't promise, but I would say at least 8 out of 10 times, it will come to you,
Absolutely.
Because we spend a lot of time stressing on that. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't graduate if I don't do this. And you don't want to do something that is forced upon you because then your heart's really not in it. It's not in it. And it's going to be more of work than a passion. So it usually comes to you in that darkest hour, in the last moment where you're thinking, I won't find a thing. Here it goes. So relax. It's coming, I promise. It will come to you. It'll come to you.
And on that, like the whole let it come to you, I think a big thing that we talk about is like how the growth continues, growth continues, growth continues, growth. So you looking for things, you just being aware of what's going on, keeping interest, and just having more, just like growing your own, like what's going on, it can lead to those. That's what happened to me. And that is what happened to Anthony. It's not like we were just kind of sitting in around and just waiting for it to fall. We were doing other things to better ourselves, grow ourselves. We were learning about what else was going on, and that is how those things found us. So, what's the quote? Like I can't remember. It's like a Bible quote that's like a faith without works is dead. Like you can believe in it all you want, but also you have to be moving towards that. You have to know that you're looking for it to find you. You never know what it's going to look like, but absolutely.
Oh my gosh. And talking about Antoinette and how she was over the National Endowment of the Arts and how things are going right now with the Kennedy Center. And a friend to the show, is now dealing with how things are being handled at the Kennedy Center. And I think that's very unfortunate how his piece and this wonderful ensemble was going to perform pieces of diverse repertoire and everything. And then now everything pretty much of diversity, equity, and inclusion of music-wise have been canceled. So now it's really affecting more people than you think it is. And we first talked about, the president taking over the Kennedy Center and the changing of federal funding, a couple episodes ago. How quickly it went from just a story to now it affecting us in our circles, and how close and how quick this is happening. Dangerous.
I believe it's crazy. I think the Gay Men's Chorus also, the Gay Men's Chorus of Washington, D.C., they were going to do a concert with National Symphony Orchestra that just got canceled off the calendar. I saw that this past week too. A group that is like specifically working with artists with disabilities had a huge grant that got canceled, so they're not sure exactly like what they're going to be doing funding wise. It is happening. Like it was very like maybe a month ago, seemingly such a oh, this is just something that's going to happen at that level when it's not going to reach us. It's already here. It's already affecting people who we know like one step away, right? And it's going to keep happening. I don't know. It's scary to think about how quickly that can change. The amount of people who I'm sure have already been let go and furloughed and fired from their positions.
Been seeing like all these Facebook posts and people sharing them. I'm like, oh, I was let go for no reason. I'm like, this is scary. And then I saw this stupid clip. Oh, I hate social media, but I love TikTok because I love to brain rot. And literally, this Orange Crush of a man got into an argument on the podium at a luncheon about the federal law coming down about trans women and trans men not competing in other sports or something like that. And I think it was the governor of Maine, and they said, we'll follow the actual laws, the state laws.
Others,
And he's
yep.
like, well, you will follow federal laws or you're not getting no funding. I said, so we're literally gonna pull funding from an entire state because they don't do what you want.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I'll see you in court. He's like, oh, that'll be an easy one. I'm like, why are we so like this? Like, if you have to have the last word that bad, you are probably
Immature.
so immature. You are literally a seventh grader.
Immature. Just
I taught three of them today. I know they like to have the last word for no reason.
Yes.
It almost feels like, in a way, they know that doing all of this is like in an election, let's say, if they try to pull something saying, oh, well, he wasn't consecutively a two-term, meaning he can try to run again, or you know what I mean? Like, I'm already trying to think about how they're going to try to go about this. It feels almost like they know they wouldn't get it in the next election, and they're trying to just do as much damage as possible so that the next administration who comes in, it takes time for them to undo all of what they've done. Because I can't imagine that, and if you are out there, you're listening to this and you voted for him for whatever reason, I'd be surprised if you listen to us and you
Maybe.
voted for him, first
But
of
if
all.
you do, go ahead and learn you something.
Right. And if you do, hey, if you're here, welcome. Let's talk about it because I would hope
Definitely a
that
learning opportunity for you.
learning opportunity, and I would hope that the conversations we're having about this is showing you how terrible this, like what they're doing, how it's affecting people who are just trying to spread joy and spread life, you know? And like, I don't know, I would hope that there's a big percentage of people who maybe voted for him and thought, oh, because of the morals and the values, you're seeing that actually didn't matter. Like once they're like in real time, what they're doing is not actually what they said they would be doing, because your eggs are still $6. Your gas is still upwards of $5 here, yeah, right? Like on the West Coast at least. So the things that we all want, we're not getting. And I think that's what we should really be focusing on, is where things are being taken away from people that they don't deserve that. They just want to spread joy in their communities. They're not harming anyone. And religious values don't belong in politics. That is something that the country was just built on in general. And religious freedom was one of the big reasons as to why America was even formed in the first place. So it's just insane to me when they're running on this idea of like Christian values and morals and everything, yet they're doing the opposite, right?
Yeah, doing the complete opposite. And I just want to shout out Kevin Shironzi, whose piece was, taken off, and he's made his statement about, the piece Rising Light, which I absolutely love. How his piece was about pre-COVID, or I think it's post-COVID Asian hate that many people of the Asian community were getting because of COVID, which we remember how that was and what was going on. And so he wrote this piece about finding the light and how one day this world will finally be together and people will understand each other's different backgrounds and welcome those different backgrounds. And so to see that that piece was removed, and he still later in his statement, I love how he just says, I'm not speaking on anybody. Thank you so much for the Marine Band and Equity Arc to still be supporting and use their voices for this to happen. And he's very sad for the high school students who wouldn't get this chance to do something on a big stage, a collaborate with the Marine Band and performing music by a composer that has historically been oust out of performing on stages like that. And which that statement, his whole statement, made me think about our the composer we started this year talking about, and how kind of 180 these statements were with Andrew Boss. How Andrew Boss took more of the I guess aggressor, more on the like, I'm ready to fight for this. Like, I'm ready to really go out into the field and get the scrapping that I feel so ousted and I don't feel validated and this and that. And my music isn't getting played because there was so much DEI and things like that. And then you have Kevin on the other hand, who's like, this is truly a federal decision that is coming down, an actual reason to be upset. And he's like, I feel bad for the students. I am still thankful that, I was even here and my name was on the program. But at the end of the day, it's about the musicians and creating an opportunity to expand knowledge. Those are two composers. And re in reality, kind of the same kind of, I guess, type of decision of is my music being played or not, but two different ways to kind of their response to this situation.
No,
Mind you,
and
I just want to say Kevin is like 23, maybe 22. I think Kevin's 22. I think Angel Ross is like pushing 40. So I'm just saying, like, talk about mature.
age don't mean nothing.
Her.
No, and like with everything that happened with Kevin's piece and everything that else has been happening, with the past couple of pieces, it's reminded me of like, oh my God, like y'all. The people I heard quotes of at Midwest, like, oh, like Caucasian people, I'm scared about entering the workforce right now because I'm not going to get a job. Baby, your pieces aren't getting pulled off of programs because you're not white. And it's DEI. So those quotes, BS. The world that we're living in right now, BS. And anybody who wants to defend Orange Crush or the federal government and all this other stuff right now, baby, you better just pack it up and sing your sad song when we hit the Great Depression. Okay.
It's coming. It's
Okay.
coming.
It's going to take probably four consecutive Democrat terms to turn back these 4 years and to fight. Because the only way you can repack Supreme Court, I don't know if anybody knows this, is for them to leave. And they don't leave until they pass away. So it's a little critical.
What's really interesting about what y'all were just speaking about, in terms of, the like, let's say 2018 through 2023, 2024-ish, were like the hot times of where DEI was like as a term was really like hot, right? And the initiatives are being really pushed, and the funding of the NEA and all this stuff. Like, these are the moments where there was a lot of effort being put into it. During this time frame, again, this is maybe, let's say, just a 6-year-ish time frame, composers like Andrew Boss and others who are like, oh, I can't find work. I can't get a, no one's gonna play my piece because blah, 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 all this stuff. That is what that feeling of not feeling like you're gonna get a program because of what you look like and things you can't change is the feeling that anyone who is not a white man specifically, a straight white man specifically, has felt forever, forever. You having this one time period where you feel that way, what the funny thing is, you would think it would draw some empathy. You would think it would draw some a moment of reflection and going, oh my gosh, they like I'm gonna look take a look at the colleagues I have around me who are, kind of at the same level getting their pieces performed, and they're not a straight white man. I would be like, holy crap, you the amount of work that you had to do to overcome that is just insane. And you shouldn't have had to do that, especially because you had to do that by working 10 times harder than I myself did. And like, this is a moment for maybe me to call in my privilege and see how I can best use my platform to help others, is what you should have done. Instead, now you look like an ass because there are people who literally, point blank period, can say, my piece was removed based off of this, this, and this, and this, and because we were this, and they have actual reason and proof, definitive proof that they were targeted based off of things that are out of their control. You are still saying it's because of this and DEI did this and it's not making. There's still many white composers who are having their pieces every day.
Every
Check,
day.
check, 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 check. They're running it up. They're running it up. So it's not DEI. Maybe we should, a call in is needed. A call in.
A moment to sit at the table and actually look at yourself. That's what's needed.
Every time I see a Larry Clark piece being played, it truly makes me want to crash out. Now, I don't know who in the world knows who Larry Clark is or what he has done, but baby, he impersonated a female composer and a composer of color because, in his words, said, oh, their music is getting played right now, so let me make some more money.
That is what he did.
And
And
his
he was
music is
allowed to
getting
Midwest. Don't forget that.
right.
And still getting played. And if you have to, if you are lying to yourself, be like, oh, well, there's not many other works for a young band. Girl, Anne McGinty wrote about 20 million.
Anne McGinty, yes. James
Baby, Tyler
Berengen.
S. Brandt wrote some.
There's many other young band pieces
Like,
to do.
that ain't Larry Clark. Leave him in the past because he is truly an awful person. And that was like some people are like, oh, well, Michael, okay, he's an awful person, blah, 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 blah. No, baby, he's an awful person. People can be bad people, you can still play. No, he is an awful human being. If I saw him today, I would throw my shoe at his face. And I don't even know what this man looks like. But if someone said, that's Larry Clark.
White whip, just
But the other thing is, he, to my knowledge, she never had remorse.
right.
Because I can probably 100% dare and stand on my dare that he did not return his profits from his
Stop.
African composers and return it to Asian women composers or to
No.
something to help that community. I can promise you he did nothing of the sort for that. So there is
Thing.
no remorse.
A funny thing, and this is not even that funny. Literally 6 months after he got caught, he was already hired to go to the Auburn Honor Band as the guest composer. And I was like, and of course, this is years ago, y'all. If y'all look this up now, it ain't half years ago. But the fact that it was like that quick, like, oh, he got caught. Everybody knew about it. Hey, you want to come be our guest composer? With an Asian female conductor. Let's just put that irony right there.
It's oh.
But hey, Kevin's piece is getting pulled off of the President's Song program. So,
Right. It is what here's the thing, because like there are gonna be people who are like, oh, so people can't appreciate music by other cultures and like blah blah. That's not what this was. This was someone intentionally impersonating a different identity, knowing that there was a significant intention of the community to play more and platform more works by like people of color, other marginalized communities, women, LGBTQ, etc. And he specifically took money, took food out of other composers' mouths in order to just satisfy himself. That is not appreciation. It's
And
not appreciation.
on a deeper level, he knew what he was doing.
Right.
Because here's the thing, there have been other white composers who have written music that was influenced by Asian culture. One of the biggest songs is Variation on a Korean Folk Song, John Barnes Chance. That
Yes.
piece is still being played. It's constantly in a conducting rotation as well. So like that piece, you have other pieces like William Owens, who's a black composer. He has a piece called Piñata that's influenced by Latinx and Hispanic culture. Boom. But to create a name, first of all, the name is a very stereotypical name. And
Oh,
not
did you
only
look
is
it
it a
up?
stereotypical name, it is a female stereotypical name. So you set out to make money to do this. That's why you're a horrible person.
Right.
Because you could have made that same music and say that this was inspired by this and that. And, you know, I mean, somebody probably would have said something, but most people would have been like, well, I mean, we're still going to play it if it's good, da 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 da. But no, you said, no, I need to create an Asian woman's music, create a fake name, go to my publisher. And I think the publisher also needs to be held accountable too, because
Yes.
they knew this. It wasn't like, what's the author from, like, we learned in not elementary, in high school. It was a female composer, but was it the person who did Chronicles of Narnia? Is that a female? It's an author. It's an author who was who is a female, but they used just their initials. It was like A
Oh,
dot M.
C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, like, and so it's not a situation like that. Like this, Larry Clark actually created a fake full name, and then profited off of this. Like that to me, your intention was false. You knew the function was false. You went into it with so much wrongness in your heart. That's why I would never respect that man, nor will I respect anybody doing his pieces. And he had some pieces that I loved. I remember playing it in middle school, and I was going to play with my middle school. But then I was like, no, no. And so I think we all need to do that too.
So literally, y'all, it doesn't get any worse. One of his pieces was entitled Konnichiwa that he wrote under the female pseudonym. Now, and the thing is, people have famous classical composers have done exoticism. Like Tchaikovsky's one of the biggest ones with Nutcracker. My baby, that is not like, yeah, anyways. And other people have paid homage to other things, but creating a name, writing pieces, and one of them being Konnichiwa. That's next level. Again, as I said, an awful person.
Yep.
So if I see you playing Larry Clark, it's on site.
On site. It's
Yeah.
on site. Because I truly think you're not doing your job as an educator.
No,
Because
because that's the thing. Like, if you're going to do work by someone like that's outside of your own perspective, dig deep, find something new, find something different. It's like someone going to France and writing a piece called Bonjour, and it's like a play on La Vie en Rose. Girl, we all know that. Like, what's something new? Go find something. Go find an interesting bookstore that you found randomly in France, or a food that people don't know about, and write a piece inspired by the sounds and the smell. Like, do something interesting that is of that culture, but is not stereotypical, and that's not pandering either, which I think is what Michael's talking about, this idea of using a very stereotypical Asian female name. Just write titling the piece Konnichiwa, like make it something, and that's the difference. That's the difference. If you're gonna do something, dig deep.
Yep.
The fact that people bought it, I'm just.
And then, but you have pieces like Kevin's, who's, you know, talking about what him and his culture was dealing with after COVID or during and after COVID. And then that won't be played on certain pieces, but then Larry Clark will glad any, they will always program his pieces and the pseudonym pieces. They will program those. But Kevin's is the piece that won't be on.
No.
That's what's upsetting. Or Andrew Boss piece also will be programmed, but not Kevin's. That, see, there is the issue that we're having and why we keep talking about this. And with the federal government and the president taking over one of the biggest art organizations that we have, and basically starting to indoctrinate his own very chaotic way of where art should be. It's only a trickle-down effect from that. It's coming faster and faster and going to be encroaching into more and more circles. It's coming quick. So we have to start standing up for what is right and what is wrong. And We can debate on what's right and what's wrong, but if you listen to this podcast, we already know we see each other. But what we have to do is start to get others to see the light, to see what we are talking about here. Because until they see it, that is the only times it's going to change.
It's true. It's true. And you can start, I mean, educators, look into who you're platforming. I know y'all are busy. I know y'all are tired, and you may just see whatever the pseudonym he was using and saying, oh, great, this is a piece. Take a second. We, unfortunately, fortunately, I did go back and forth, live in a world where you can look up living composers and a lot of times see their website, see their social media accounts. You can go see like who they are, what they look like, what they're about. And you can go, oh my gosh, okay, they're a person. I can reach out to them before I program their piece and say, hey, can we hop on a Zoom call? I really want to just talk about your piece and what you went about it. If you really care enough to program music and you are trying to intentionally program music for your students that are outside of the standards that maybe you yourself grew up on, take a second, like just take a second and actually think about it and like don't do more harm. Because unfortunately for a lot of people, you're bamboozled, you know, you just have one little Google search and you're like, great, this is a piece I'm going to play. Sometimes that's fine, right? If it's a reliable database composer, you know, database source or whatever, maybe it's reliable. Other times you can have situations like the Larry Clarks of it all that occur, and like you are represent your programs are out there. Your students are going to remember those pieces. Let them play pieces by composers who actually care, who actually tried, who put things into it. The biggest argument for like not wanting to program pieces by other composers or anything DEI related, it's like it's never as good. I don't want to sacrifice quality. You're not actually listening to what is being like created these days. If you're like, oh, Kevin Day, I won't do Kevin Day because blah, blah, blah. Quality, that is quality. That is quality of the umph, I don't even know, like degree of quality and expertise and knowledge and thoughtfulness and intention and groove and just beauty overall. All these other amazing composers like Viet Quang, like just how could like so take a second and actually think about what you're saying. We already know what the opposing side, their thoughts on it are always going to be like, we just want good art for the sake of good art. That's what Wagner is. We're not going to get back on the Wagner topic. All I will say is that yes, there's some beautiful music there, but there's also equally, if not even more, beautiful music that is being created in this moment, in this time, by living composers who have way better values than Wagner ever could, ever did, ever dreamed of. And if you're not doing it, if you're not taking the time to look for it, you are lazy. You are part of the problem. You are part of the problem. If you don't want to be a part of the conversation, take that and know that. If you are intentionally trying to be about it, take a second and just be about it. Actually be about it.
And it really doesn't take a lot of research, y'all.
No.
Like, I'm part of this one Facebook group, and people be like, oh my God, I'm looking for a grade four piece. And I, within 20 minutes, I see 20 comments. Now, most of them are by white men, and that's okay. But if you said, hey, I'm looking for a grade four piece by a unrepresented composer, you will still get 20 comments within 20 minutes. Like, you could even be lazy and still program music that fits your children. Because the reason why this hurt me so much when I saw this Larry Clark thing being thing is that there are Asian kids in the program that are playing this piece. I just like you don't know how, do you know what Larry Clark has done? And imagine if your students found out what this man has done. And then they're like, oh, but you know, but this leads me to an even bigger problem, y'all. The fact that half the band programs I visit, I'm like, oh my God, who's on the top right corner of your page? And they're like, what? I'm like, what's the name on the top right corner of your page? Oh, it's so and so. Do you know who that is? Oh, heard. So he's a great friend of mine. We could call him right now, but you know, he's busy. So let me tell you about him and about when he wrote this piece. Oh, look at the top right corner of your page. Oh, she is amazing. She's wonderful. She lives in Canada. She's a beautiful soul. And she writes music that's just fun to play. Yeah, look at the top right corner of your page. Like, It doesn't take long. And I'm not saying, oh, I out here know all these people. But if I do know them, I try to tell them a story about who they are and where they wrote this, where they wrote this piece. If I don't know them, like every Granger, ain't nobody on this earth know him personally, but we all have written something about him and knows how half these pieces were written or why. Just tell them and they can relate to the music, y'all. Like ignoring on the top right corner of the page is just as bad as ignoring a wrong rhythm.
Right.
It's part of the what I call step one of your conducting analysis whenever you get a new piece is to know the background of the piece and the composer. And also, how are you going to get your students to know who that is too?
Right.
It's important. So, every day it's like something new, and then but it takes us to continue to bring awareness to these issues, because if no one talks about it, then it just seems that we're okay with what's happening, and we are not. So
No.
we have to speak up for it. Please let us know what your thoughts are, and always just provide love and light for whomever and everybody around you. I hope you enjoyed our cocktails and talking today. Mine is all done.
Right.
Oh, mine's not.
Ooh.
Well, mine is all done. Somebody go make me another. And you should too after you get done listening to this podcast. And next time, go ahead and make yourself a cocktail and we'll have our ones. And so we'll see you next week. Bye.